if I had to tell you that, you know, in the space of, I don't know, 3 years since I've been working for Refract, I've probably received maybe 2 emails that I think have been as effective as mine and have caused me to respond, and the rest I just haven't responded to. That's the reality of what we're facing. There's a huge amount of noise out there. It's getting harder and harder for salespeople to break through that noise. However, the reality is when you actually take a step back, it's not that hard.
Hi, I'm Josh Braun, and this is Inside Selling, a podcast about selling without selling your soul, where I explore how you can reduce sales pressure for both yourself and your prospects through the simple acts of being curious and just being yourself. Today, my guest, Richard Smith, the co-founder and head of sales at Refract. If you don't know what that is, get off this podcast. What are you doing? Head over there right now and check it out. Richard got on my radar because he sent me one of the best cold emails I've ever received, and I've received a lot. In this conversation, we're going to talk to Richard about his approach for cold emailing that goes against much of the conventional wisdom that's out there. Richard, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks so much, Josh, and thanks for the compliments. Always nice to have those on a Monday.
Yeah, took me a couple minutes to write it, and feel free to, to take it and send it to your network, and your mom especially.
Absolutely, I'll make sure I do that. She'll be delighted.
Richard, I want to start by reading your email. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read the whole thing, and then we're going to talk about your process. So let me read it to you guys. So the subject is to be a better closer, be a better opener. And for context, that is a reference to a blog post that I wrote. So here's Richard's email. Josh, read your article about why salespeople need to become better openers if they want more success at closing sales. It pretty much reaffirms everything I've been reading and writing on recently, the importance of discovery in the sales process, and the sad reality that so many reps just aren't effective enough at it. Check out my blog here where I wrote what I wrote this morning. I noticed that you specialize in helping sales reps become more profitable with their outreach in order to generate higher quality pipeline. I wasn't sure by looking into sales DNA whether this was restricted to email or if you also focus on the phone. We help sales coaches globally create longer lasting, stickier relationships with their clients using our practice coaching platform, enabling them to coach phone and email outreach skills from distance and provide stronger return on investment and behavioral change to their clients. Is this something we could talk about, Rich? So that is an email that really caught my attention from when he said hello. Rich, I want to just start by asking you a question. Is this the normal type of email that you send out, or am I special?
Well, you're definitely special, but unfortunately, you know, you're not unique in that. This is an email approach that not just myself, but my whole team here at Refract, are very, very serious about. I think, you know, the way my kind of philosophy is that I know what can get people's attention through outreach. And I know this more because I myself get sent, 10 cold emails every day on average. And if I had to tell you that, you know, in the space of, 3 years since I've been working for Refract, I've probably received maybe 2 emails that I think have been as effective as mine and have caused me to respond, and the rest I just haven't responded to. That's the reality of what we're facing. There's a huge amount of noise out there. It's getting harder and harder for salespeople to break through that noise. However, the reality is when you actually take a step back, it's not that hard, because there's so much awful noise out there, it doesn't take much to just do things a little bit differently to be seen and heard. So this is what I do, how I prospect, not just with email, but I do the same approach on the phone, but if we just focus on email. And the kind of comments that you made there, Josh, about the best cold email I've received in, you know, however long, me and my team receive that kind of praise, and this is not bullshit, but we get that kind of praise on a daily basis from people. So, you know, I'd like to say it's we're special. I'd like to say that it's we're unique. The reality is that we're just doing things which every sales team can do. They're just not doing it.
So, Rich, what from your perspective, what do you think is different about your cold outreach than the other cold outreaches that typically people send, at least at a 50,000 foot level? And then we can kind of delve in. I really want to delve into the process that you use as well, step by step.
Yeah.
But at a high level, you know, what's unique about this, I guess? Why do you think it stands out? Yep. And more importantly, gets the type of responses that you get, which is like, this is a great cold email, which you very rarely will hear people responding in that yep. way.
Really simple answer, Josh. You, as the receiver of that email, know that email was written specifically for you. You know that I could not have sent that same email to anybody else, even to other sales coaches. You know that email from the subject line to the opening to how I linked the value proposition to the opening. You know that was completely and utterly written from scratch. I'd taken time. I'd done the research. There was not a doubt in your mind, I'm sure, unless you correct me, that you thought, wow, great email. Wouldn't surprise me if Richard sent that same email to almost five other people, only five people, not 100. That email was for me. And you know what? As humans, as soon as we get emails that look like they've been handcrafted for you, that was a special email for you, and that email landed in your inbox and no others, and yes, you'd gone the time of potentially understanding how I could be a valuable prospect, that's what causes people to respond. And it comes down to as simple as that. You know that I wrote that email for you.
Yeah, there's definitely a feeling when I read it that it was written just for me, and that did make me feel special. And I think at the end of the day, a big part of sales is a transfer of emotion. I mean, obviously you have to have things that are going to help someone get what they want or need. But even bigger than that is this idea that you actually care and you made me feel special. Okay, so let's break this down. So I want to walk through your process step by step for this email, and maybe it's the same process you follow for everyone. So I guess step one is you find a person to email. I mean, so take me through that process. Yep. How'd you even find me?
Yeah. So a lot of our approach is, as you would have taken the theme of this specific email, is content driven. Now, content, when I say content, it's quite a broad topic, but it could be anything from something you wrote to something you said on a podcast like we're doing now. Note to all salespeople, listen to this podcast. Think about how you can use the information that we're talking about on this podcast maybe to approach me. But that's, you know, let's just see if people actually do that. It could be based on something that you've written on social media. It could be something that you're company has announced that has a direct impact on yourself. There's so much information out there, some stuff that's much more personalized to the individual than others, but there is so much content out there. So for us, it's about, right, finding the content. Does that content link to a specific ideal customer profile that we have in that business, or is that person who's wrote that content specific to the kind of guys that we contact?
Let me stop you. Let me stop you right there, because yep. I know there's going to be people saying, "Yeah, that's great," but I have a list of people I have to get in front of. And so, how do you bridge that gap of like I have to get in front of these six people? I have these 10 accounts, and yep. I can't start with the content. I have to start with the person.
Yep. Okay. So incredibly simple. If you want to kind of reverse engineer that process, you've got the name of the person. Now it's time to find out stuff about that person. I can guarantee you can find stuff about that person within 5 minutes of getting that name. You know, let's just take, you know, you're contacting a guy called Joe Bloggs, works for, you know, software company ABC. Type his name into Google, right? See if you click on news on that individual, has that person had any articles where he's been quoted in the past year? If he's a senior person, you can probably be confident that he has. Go on that person's LinkedIn profile. Has he wrote any status updates? Has he published any of his own content? Go on to Twitter. Type that person's name into Twitter. Does he have a Twitter profile? What's he been tweeting about? What's in his biography? Does he support a sports team? Does he have any common interests? You know, within 5 minutes, I can guarantee any salesperson or individual listening to this podcast, you will be able to find out something relevant to as a pertinent email opener about that person within 5 minutes. We're not talking about 2 hours worth of research here. And I, as a challenge, if anyone wants to send me a name of a person on their list, right, I guarantee that within 5 minutes of me receiving that email, I'll come back to them with something quite interesting and relevant about that person.
Very, very interesting. So with regards to what you did with me, did you start with the content or was I on your list?
I believe with yourself, just cast my mind back. I think I just saw you on my LinkedIn activity feed.
Okay.
Someone, this is before we even connected, but I saw someone had maybe liked something that you'd posted. It's like, who's this Josh guy? Clicked in your profile, bang, within 5 minutes, I've landed on something of relevance.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like there's ever a case, Richard, where I need to get in front of this company and this particular person is really, there's nothing much I can find. You're saying, hey, if that's the case, maybe find someone else. But you're saying, BS, there is something that you can find, but it's not just about finding something like they went to school somewhere, because that to me is not as relevant. Like, notice you went to state, you know, school in Florida. You must love the sunshine. Like, that to me is a very weak sort of relevance. It not only has to be relevant, it has to be a little meaty, and it has to ladder back to some way in which you can help, right?
Yeah, sure. So I definitely have experienced the challenges of, you know, you've got this one prospect, you can't find anything about them specifically or personally. So why don't I go to the next level of looking about that company's information? I'll give you a great example of this, Josh. So I do have this where I was like, you know, not every prospect that I'm following writes a blog or writes content. That's just a fact of life. However, you know, we target sales leaders. So guess what? On LinkedIn right now, I can see track on a company by company basis. You know, is that company hiring for salespeople? Go to the careers page of their website. On LinkedIn, it will give you company insights to say that this company's sales team has grown from, you know, 100 people to 150 in the past year. I can find out in that company that they've been launching some new product updates for their product. You know, what does that mean? Salespeople have to go out and sell those products. So, you know, there's so many, it takes a little bit of creativity, but, you know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, relevant information about the individual. You know, go a step beyond that, look at the company, and, you know, the stuff will be there to find.
Yeah, something else that I've done as well, we use a product called Siftery that allows you to see the types of technologies that companies are using, which is interesting if that ladders back to your product or offering. So if, in fact, you're doing what I do, which is to coach people on how to get higher response rates with cold email. Obviously, I don't do it as well as Richard, by the way. You should hire him, not me, for sure. I can't write. But we might see that people are using Outreach or Tout or Yesware on their as part of their sales stack, and that might be, as Richard's saying, a trigger or an observation that we can make. So this first paragraph that Richard's writing, really it's the first chunk of it, is really an observation that he is making about something that he noticed about me or my company. And the other thing you did, Richard, that I thought was interesting is you actually linked to an article that you wrote that was complimented what I wrote about, which maybe is the perfect storm. I would imagine that doesn't happen often. Is that like a bonus thing?
Yeah, that was definitely a bonus. I mean, you know, you can sometimes stumble across things where I'm going to be totally honest with you here, Josh. When I wrote that email, right, and I said to myself as I hit the send button, I'm 90% sure Josh will respond back to that email because, you know, in some cases the stars did align, admittedly, but when I'd say that the majority of the time, and I have my sales reps say this to me as well, when they send an email and they say, I'm going to get a response off that person, and 9 times out of 10, they get a response. And that just comes from you know, when you have basically given someone such, like, there isn't an, like, there's going to be such a small chance they haven't really got an excuse not to respond back. And I just want people to start thinking about that. How can you give, when you send your email, how can you make that prospect think, God, if I don't respond back to that person, I'm doing them a disservice. You know, I'm kind of like, I feel really bad for not doing it. And I'm not saying here that, you know, people should just take meetings with you because they feel sorry for you or they really like your email approach. So you've still got to give value in that email. But let's get this mindset away from, you know, send 100 emails and, you know, maybe we might get 5% of responses. Let's move to an approach where we're sending emails thinking, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a response from that.
That is a very unique perspective. I want to address that as after we go through these steps, because I do want to talk about the technologies out there that are mass personalization at scale, because there's universal truths of how people are and what they're interested in, and we kind of dump in thousands of leads. So I do want to address that. But the second paragraph now, so we've gone to the subject line, which is an article that I wrote. We've got the first paragraph where you're addressing something that I wrote, and sort of bonus that you're linking to something that you wrote that's similar. And then the second paragraph, you're linking this. So let's talk about this. So the second paragraph starts, notice that you specialize in helping sales reps become more profitable with their outreach. So that's directly off of my site. So is the idea with the second paragraph here, here's what I observed, and now I'm going to link that to something else that I observed about your business? Is that the sort of intent of the second paragraph?
Yeah, I think this is the key piece here that a lot of salespeople often go wrong with their cold emailing, because sometimes, this is a very rare occurrence based on my own experience, but they might write a really personalized opening gambit to the email. But what they don't do is link their value proposition back to that. You know, it's that classic case, Josh, where you're like, you know, I've seen this before where people say, hey, so that you support X football team, wow, guess what, so do I. We provide this product. And it's like, well, there's no direct correlation there. You have to link the opening of the email into your value proposition. Otherwise, you know, you will just be perceived as just a salesperson who isn't doing the research, who isn't trying to offer real value back to your potential areas of interest. So yeah, to answer your question, it is all about seeing how can I go from that opening line, how can I grab attention, how can I make it look really personalized, but how can I actually kind of start joining the dots as far as how we can specifically help you. And that's the bit that I think a lot of people often kind of fall down on.
Yeah, something else I liked about the second paragraph that I thought was unique is this phrase that you wrote that said, I wasn't sure by looking into sales DNA. So what I like about it is it's not assumptive. It's a very nice phrase to say, look, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's nice language. Is that intentional as well? Or is that just how you are?
Yeah. I've got to admit, I don't often use that kind of approach. But again, this is coming back from like me constantly learning about what works and what doesn't. And you are right. I think as salespeople, we're forever assumptive. And I think I saw a post that you made yesterday, Josh, about this, where just because we assume one person has this problem doesn't mean that everyone else has the problem, even if you have the same job title or in the same industry. And that's hard for salespeople to not make assumptions constantly. So this is the kind of a new approach that I've thought of is, well, how about we start just asking and posing questions and make it at least look to our prospects that we are trying to think about this, that we're not just making these assumptions, that there is an element of, you know, I think there could be a good fit here, but I need you to help me out with that. And this is just more fuel to the fire to get you to say, well, actually, it shows that Richard is actually going that step further he's looked at my website, clearly. He's looked at the kind of things that I offer. He's definitely done that to such an extent that he's still not 100% sure. So it goes to show that he is actually taking his time. And it just gives you more of an excuse to actually give me that response. I'm kind of, you know, I've put that little, you know, bit of bait out there, Josh, for saying, you know, you need to help me out with answering this question. And that's kind of the approach that I've started to build into my, you know, other emails that I'm writing.
Yeah. Also talking about, you know, generating higher quality pipeline, which is definitely a benefit. And we're two paragraphs in and there's no mention of Richard's product at all. So now we're sort of at the last paragraph of this email where he then starts to say how he helps coaches. So I help coaches create longer lasting relationships through practicing and coaching. And so Richard, is that last paragraph is really where you then start to position how you might be able to help someone do something better. But it's like this last two sentences. So we're looking at like maybe, I don't know, five or six sentences. And then the smallest part of the email at the bottom is, oh, by the way, I kind of do this thing.
Yeah, exactly. And by that point, you're already completely engaged with that email. You're already probably intrigued. You're already thinking, wow, this guy has done his research. And, you know, I'm kind of almost really eager to see, you know, what is the true reason why he's got in touch today. So, you know, I think mostly when we receive these cold emails, because the opening is so bad that we never even get to that part of the email, we've already discounted it. We may have even discounted it before we've even opened it because the subject line has been so awful. But yeah, I think at the same time, we still need to make sure that we do provide the reason for getting in touch, which is kind of what we can offer. And again, crucial part here, linking back whatever product or service you provide back to what you were talking about beforehand, making that connection, joining the dots, making it look like there's a relevant reason for getting in touch.
Yeah, and then perhaps one of my favorite lines at the end is that Richard didn't ask me for 60 minutes of my time, nor would he, if he was probably on a date with someone for the first time, probably wouldn't ask to meet her parents. So his sort of call to action at the end was, is this something we can talk about? And it's very binary, right? Yes or no. So well done. So Richard, a couple questions. Let's say I didn't respond to that. Do you follow up like 10 times? Like, what's the deal on the follow-up?
I despise, you know, personally, this approach of did the person respond, yes or no? If they didn't, they get sent this templated email. If they didn't respond to that, they get sent this templated email. Because what that does is ultimately it completely makes a mockery of the effort that I've put into, you know, touch one. If I'm then sending out a really kind of unpersonalized, you know, follow-up email, touch two. Kind of a big part for me, this is my kind of own personal sort of cadence, is if I've sent that email, right, that I'm so convinced that that person will respond or at least have an interest in what I've got to say, and they haven't responded, then I call them up. That my next approach is the phone, and the phone becomes the exact same approach. Hey, Josh, Richard from Refract here. I noticed the blog that you wrote last week talking about X, Y, or Z really got me interested. I actually sent you an email about this, but appreciate you probably haven't seen it. The reason I wanted to get in touch was X, Y, or Z. What I'm doing there is I'm taking the exact same approach to email, but just bringing it to phone. And I'd say that 9 times out of 10, when I've wrote that really personalized email, where I've almost been gutted that I haven't had a response because I'm like, how does this person not responded? I know that if I get them on the phone, I'm probably going to convert them into an opportunity or a next call because they're going to want to listen to what I've got to say. Just my emails just hasn't been responded to because they haven't opened it. They haven't had the time to read it. They may not have understood what I was positioning first time around.
So you will lead with the email, and then you have a system in place for reminding yourself to call. Like if I didn't respond, I may have gotten a call in 3 or 4 days, and you would use a similar approach. It's sort of like, this is what I observed about you, and based on that, this is how I might be able to help.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And to answer your kind of the initial question, again, I kind of ask people whoever's have been on the, you know, the receiving end of 5 or 6 or 7, you know, templated sequenced follow-up emails, you know, they just start getting annoying. And you're just like, I didn't respond to the first one. You know, if you didn't respond to the second one, then you're definitely not interested, or your approach is all wrong. You know, who enjoys getting them? Yet we live in this world where we have, like, you know, we've kind of made salespeople feel like that is the approach. Like, you know, here's 6 emails and they get sent out 2 or 3 days after each other. You push a button and that's all you need to worry about. And I just think, what are we doing with our salespeople? Are we actually training them to be effective and take pride in their outreach and actually help to guarantee responses? Or are we just, you know, helping them push a button? And then, the thing that I've struggled with for so long is that sales leaders will have this approach. You know, they'll buy in the technologies to help sales people do this, to take this approach to their prospecting. Yet the same sales leaders who get pissed off when they get 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 emails on the same topic that they didn't respond to first time around. Let's just get serious. Let's start coaching and training our salespeople to send emails and do outreach that actually increases chances of getting responses first time around.
Well, I love what you're saying. The other thing too, like, you know, I think as sales professionals, we read this research. And I just wrote about this a couple of days ago. You need to send 7 emails because there's a 65% chance on the front. How does anyone know? Like, where are these stats coming from? Like, I call BS on these stats. Like, is that really the case? Like, who's like going into email systems and knows all this stuff? Like, that's the other thing. I'm very skeptical. But I think people read stats, and I think I read another article last week that said 77% of all stats are made up stats. So, like, I think people, these stats are made up by the companies oftentimes that are selling the software to be able to do this stuff. And so I don't know how you feel about that, but it's like, hey, but Richard, I can't do that because it takes 7 touches to get someone's attention. Well, yeah, I guess not if you have an approach that's interesting.
Well, this is the problem in, we live in this world, Josh, of sales, of like just making everything more automated. And, the thought of having salespeople who will, literally make, they might take half an hour or 45 minutes to craft an email, which actually presents a 50 or 60% better chance of a response than if they spent five minutes, just populating a template with a name and a company. And people need to stop thinking of automation as being the only way. And, when I talk to sales leaders and I ask them about, sales development reps and, how many of your reps hit quota? What's their target? How many of them hit that number? And, I'm not getting answers saying, well, yeah, my SDRs are hitting quota. We have, and some of these teams that I speak with, they're not even high quotas. They get some of them getting tasked to book, 5 meetings a month, for example. It's incredible. It's like 1 meeting a week. Now, I can almost pinpoint the fact that the reason that they are having such low success is because they will have the same process that everybody else is doing, where it's just send out more and more, use templates, replace name in the subject line for another name, and people aren't getting responses. So how about we spend 45 minutes crafting an email that's going to get a response, then spending 5 minutes sending 100 emails that won't get a response? It's just, these are things that people need to start thinking about, taking seriously, because, it's getting harder and harder to make, to break through that noise. And we're just adding to the problem. We're just chucking more rubbish on the rubbish tape. That's all we're doing.
You've answered my question, which is the question that people are probably asking in their mind. Well, I mean, how many of these can I send in a day? And if this is taking me an hour or 45 minutes per email, but I think what you're saying is at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because the response rates and the quality of the conversations you're going to be having are higher. I mean, well, the response rates on these emails that you're sending, I mean, I would imagine are, I don't know if you have any stats on them. Are they?
Yeah. I mean, I can confidently say that out of, 5 really personalized emails that I send out, I'd say I'd confidently get, 1 or 2 positive responses.
Wow.
And the others I will just put into a follow-up for calls. The other thing I just want to make people consider as well, Josh, not just about, I need to send out 100 because out of 100 I'll get, 5 responses. Let's think about another way. How many prospects have we pissed off by doing that? How many leads have we burned through by, sending them, putting them into a cadence of receiving 5 or 6 emails where, they may even get value out of your products and services, but are that annoyed by your persistence and by how unpersonalized you are? They never want to talk to you again, full stop. So, let's think about another way. It's not just about the time that salespeople are wasting sending out these awful emails. What about the amount of lead pool, the size of their lead pool that is just shrinking because, they've emailed 500 people, whereas they could have emailed 10% of that audience and had a much better success rate and a much better engagement in the first place.
Richard, I love that. I'm going to coin a term here, I think. I'm going to call it the cost of cadence, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a cost of it to your brand and to your business and to your point. I think you make an excellent point. We've all been on the receiving end of 7 email sequences. I just got one from a company I won't mention, a very popular SaaS company. And one of the emails was, I need to get back to my boss. Are you interested? Some weird thing, So Richard, you have said it all. There was a tremendous amount of value in this podcast. How do people get a hold of Refract? Give us the Refract. How does Refract help? How do people learn more about Refract?
So central to, I think why we have success at this as a business is, Refract as a technology is all around helping salespeople become better, helping salespeople have better interactions with their target audience is kind of our mission. We provide technology that helps, sales managers and leaders and coaches get insights into how their salespeople are actually engaging with prospects and using that information to help coach them to become better. We use our own technology daily within our own sales team here at Refract, and hopefully the results that we have kind of speaks for the actual success of the technology. If you want to kind of find out more, website tells you a little bit more about what we do, refract.ai. I'm also, you know, more than happy to engage with people on the subject. If people want some ideas or some advice on their outreach, contact me on LinkedIn, Richard Smith Refract, or even on Twitter, Richard_Refract, and I'd be delighted to, you know, shine some advice. If you want to send me an email that you're sending out and want me to kind of come back to you with some advice and critique, then I'm more than happy to do that at absolutely no cost. So,
that is a very generous offer that you guys should take Richard up on. Richard, last question for you. Book that you're reading, book that you have read, book that you think other people should read. Is there one that kind of stands out in your mind?
Yeah. So I'm currently reading Combo Prospecting by Tony Hughes. I'm only about a quarter of the way in, but I think it just shows that there's a Tony Hughes, huge advocate of everyone in a sales organization prospecting, not just one department. And here at Refract, you're not allowed to work for Refract if you don't prospect. It's everyone's responsible for doing it, no matter if you're a SDR or an account executive. And his book really just comes into this, this mindset that people need to have of, you know, being dynamic with our prospecting skills, the regular occurrence of how we should be prospecting, and that ultimately, without constantly prospecting, you're always dicing with death in sales. You've got to constantly keep things coming up in the top of the pipeline. Kind of a little mantra I have that I say to my sales team is, in sales, always assume worst case scenario. Even those opportunities you think are going to land this afternoon, assume that this afternoon they won't. And combo prospecting is quite kind of backing up that theory.
You heard it here from Richard. Richard, thank you for the pure gold, my friend.
Absolute pleasure, Josh. Thanks again.